Today's shiur is Masechta Baba Batra Daf Kuf Nun Zayin, and we will begin on Daf Kuf Nun Vav Amud Beis at the Mishnah at the bottom of the Amud. Says the Mishnah, Rebeleza Omer B'Shabbos. Rebeleza holds on Shabbos if a Shchimera makes a declaration, and since on Shabbos Kinyonim cannot be written down, Nesh Eni Yochel Lichtoiv. Therefore, on Shabbos, there's a halacha, divrei shchimera are effective just by verbal declaration without a written formal kinyan. Avaloi b'chol, not during the week. During the week, the halacha is that you have to do a kinyan, even a shchimera has to do a formal kinyan. Rabbi Shua, however, says, b'Shabbos amru, if on Shabbos the halacha is that divrei shchimera k'ksuv k'msurim dami, certainly kal v'chayim b'chayil. As the Rashbam explains the basis for the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua, and the Rashbam explains that there's a concept that we've learned many times, kal aroy l'bila ein bila makeves ba, v'kosh ein roy l'bila bila makeves ba. It's a concept that we learned regarding a karban mincha, that the halacha is that ingredients brought for karban mincha do not have to be actually mixed for it to be a valid karban mincha. However, the halacha is that only if ingredients are brought in a measure that if one wanted to mix those ingredients, he could mix them, then the halacha is that the mixing is not considered essential. However, if somebody brought ingredients for karban mincha, there were too much volume of ingredients that it could not be mixed in the keli, in the klisharis that the karban mincha was brought in, then the halacha is that the karban mincha is disqualified. Here too, says Rabbi Yeshua, during the week where somebody, if he wanted, could make a kinyan, the halacha is that on Shabbos, the halacha is that even if he didn't make the kinyan, if he's a shchimera, it's valid. However, on Shabbos, where the halacha, as we discussed, is that one can't make a kinyan, since one can't make a kinyan on Shabbos, there it becomes an issue. Tosfos discusses at great length that in our Mishnah we find Rav Elazar saying that under certain circumstances on Shabbos, divrei shchimera k'ksuvim k'msurim dami. Yet, in the previous Mishnah, and sugya we learned, the Rebbe Elazar holds that we never accept, the shchimera always has to make a kinyan. And because of this, Tosfos in the lengthy Tosfos that begins on Amud Aleph actually says that the names of the Mishnah, the names of the Tanoim in the Mishnah have to be very carefully identified. And the previous Mishnah that says that a shchimera always has to make a kinyan, whether it's during the week or Shabbos, represents the opinion of Rebbe Elazar. Our Mishnah represents, on the other hand, the opinion of Rebbe Elazar that differentiates between Shabbos and during the week. However, there are Rishonim that suggest that both Mishnayos are the same Rebbe Elazar, and even though Rebbe Elazar, as we've been learning, is so stringent and says that a shchimera has to make a regular kinyan, Rebbe Elazar will agree that on Shabbos, because it's impossible to make a regular kinyan, the halacha is that he could just make an oral declaration. Kiyotzba, says the Gemara, the same type of machlokes we just learned regarding shchimera kinyonim on Shabbos during the week, we have a similar situation regarding a different subject. Zochen lekotn, we know the halacha is, we've learned this halacha also many times, zochen leodom shaloi befonov, that we could take ownership of an item for somebody even if he's not here. That means if I want to give somebody a gift and the person isn't here himself to take ownership of the gift, I could ask somebody to pick it up on his behalf. Says Rebbe Elazar, Zochen l'gadol, cotton, a cotton who can't make his own kinyonim, somebody else could be kind on his behalf, vein zochen l'gadol, but a gadol who could do it on his own cannot do zchi on his behalf. Divrei Rebbe Elazar, Rabbi Shulaimer, L'kotn amru. If Chazal said that zchiyah could be done on behalf of a kotn, kal v'chaim l'gadol certainly could be done on behalf of a gadol who is able to do kinyonim. Again, the concept of kol shiroi l'bila and bila makabes bam. The simple way of understanding the machloikus of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua is that there's a machloikus. How do we understand the concept of zochen la'adam shloi b'fonav? There are those that understand the concept as a special din that Chazal said zochen la'adam shloi b'fonav, whereas there are others that understand that as a concept of shlichus, and therefore Rebbe Lezer will understand that zchiyah is a concept of a special din the Rabbanan, and he will explain that the Rabbanan instituted this rule for ketanim who can't make their own kinyonim, but not for gedolim. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua will explain that the concept of zchiyah is because of shlichus, and therefore gedolim, adults, are those who could appoint somebody to do a shlichus, and therefore there's a concept of zochen la'adam shloi b'fonav by gedolim. Whereas ketanim, there is no concept of shlichus. But if that's pshat in Rabbi Yeshua's opinion, ask the Mefarshim, the Achrayim, then why does Rabbi Yeshua say that lahalocha a cotton can have zochen la'adam shloi b'fonav if it works because of shlichus and a cotton is unable to appoint a shliach? So the Shach, in answer to this question, says that is part of what a bezdin, that is what the power of bezdin, that even though ain't shlichus l'cotton, with the power of Hefker Bezdin Hefker, they could create a situation that we will be able to point a shliach on behalf of a cotton. Another explanation that I saw is, where do we say ain't shlichus l'cotton? Only when the shlichus is not a pure benefit, not an absolute benefit. But in a situation where it's absolutely a benefit, there we say shlichus l'cotton. And in the case where somebody is giving a gift to a cotton, so it's an absolute benefit, we're going to be able to say the concept of shlichus even by ketanim. Rabbi Akiva Eiger gives a different answer. He says, when we learn the rule of ain shlichus l'cotton, why? Can somebody not be a shliach on behalf of a cotton? Says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, the issue with shlichus l'cotton is not that there's an inability for somebody to be a shliach on behalf of a cotton. Rather, the issue is that a cotton doesn't have the capacity to appoint somebody as a shliach. So, explains Rabbi Akiva Eiger, in a normal situation where I want somebody to do something on my behalf, and I have to appoint him to be my shliach, so there we understand that only an adult has that ability, not a cotton. However, here it's not the cotton who's appointing the shliach. It's the din of zoch l'adam shloi b'fonav that appoints this individual to be the shliach. Since we don't need the explicit appointment by the cotton to do that this person be his shliach, therefore the cotton could still be can have a shliach do something on his behalf. Our Gemara is now going to quote a braisa, which brings two versions of the machloikis that we just learned between Rabbi Elazar and Yeshua, and the Gemara will identify which of the versions in this braisa is consistent with the version of the machloikis that we learned in our Mishnah. Says the Gemara, Masnisa Mami, who is the Tan of our Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda he. Says the Gemara follows the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda and the way he explains the machloikis of Rabbi Elazar and Yeshua. The Tanya, Remeya Oimer, Rabbi Elazar Oimer, Bechol Dvarv Kiyomim. During the week, if a Shchimera makes an oral declaration, it's effective. Remnei Shiyochel Lichtoiv, because if he wanted, he could have made a real full-fledged Kinyon. Avaloi B'Shabbos. On Shabbos, where you can't make Kinyonim, it's not, his oral declaration is not effective. Rabbi Shua Oimer, Rabbi Shua ever says, Bechol Amru, during the week, his kinyan is valid with an oral declaration. For kavachayim b'shabbos, where we want to do something on behalf of the shchimera, and he isn't able to make a regular kinyan, he isn't able to write, so therefore we accept his oral declaration. Kiyotzba, similar, lily, zoch l'kodin, only a gadol could be somebody could be zoch on his behalf, vein zoch l'gotten, not by a cotton. Divrei Rabbi Elazar. Shulaymer, Gadol Amru, if Chazal were lenient on behalf of a Gadol, Kavachayim l'kotten, certainly they were lenient on behalf of a cotton. That's Ramey's version, which clearly is different than the version we learned in our Mishnah. Yehudaymer, Yehudaymer's version is, Rabbi Elazar, b'Shabbos Tvarv Kayomim, during, on Shabbos, we accept the oral declaration of a Shchimara, because he can't do a formal kinyan. Avloy b'chol, during the week where he could do a kinyan, we won't rely on an oral declaration. If we allow an oral declaration in Shabbos, certainly we'll accept such a declaration. Kavachayim b'chol. Kiyotzba, zochen l'kotten, only for cotton can one acquire on his behalf. Then zochen l'gadol, do the kinyan by yourself. Divrei Rabbi Elazar, says Rabbi Elazar, Rishuaymer, if the cotton amru, if we could do a zchiyah, we could acquire on behalf of a cotton, certainly kavachayim l'gadol, we could do it on behalf of a gadol. Says the Mishnah, nafla bayis olov val oviv. We begin now a series of Mishnayis that discuss situations where two people were died very close to each other, but it's very important to know who died first and who died second. So nafla bayis olov val oviv. The house fell on a person and on his father. Or your love on him, and somebody he yarshins from. Vayis olov k'suvas isha b'achayiv. The son, just a simple case, where we have Yaakov, Reuven, and Reuven has a son. Now, Reuven is an individual who's married, so when he dies, he has to pay ksuba. Reuven is an individual who has debts. When he dies, he has those debts have to be satisfied. But now the question is, who died first? If the father died first, then the moment Yaakov, the father, died, Reuven becomes his Yairish. He now owned those assets that he yarshened from his father. And even if he dies immediately afterwards, he had money that has to be used to pay off the ksuva and his balichayv. Whereas, if the son, if Reuven died first, and then Yaakov died, so Reuven never yarshened from Yaakov anything. Rather, Reuven's children yarshened from Yaakov, and therefore, since Reuven never directly yarshened from Yaakov, never had anything, when he, if he dies without any other assets, his wife won't be able to collect the ksuba, his balichoy won't be able to collect their debts. And that's exactly the debate that happens at this point. Yosheav Oimrim, Haben Meis Rishin Vachkach Meis Av. The first, the father, son died, and then the father, and therefore, the son never had anything to pay off his obligations with. First the father died and then the son. So Beshamay Oimrim Yachloiku. Beshamay says that we divide the estate. Beis Hillel Oimrim Nechasim Bechizkasim. Beis Hillel hold that since the Yorshim have a definite claim, they are certainly Yorshim, the Baal Chayiv don't know for sure who died first. The halacha is ein sofik maitzim de vaday, and the yarshim will get hold of these assets and not the balichayv. How do we understand the opinion of Beis Shammai? Explain the Rishonim. Beis Shammai is of the opinion the shtar ha'oymed ligvos kegavidami, that when Reuven owed money to his balichayv, it's not to be viewed that he owed money. It's as if the balichayv already have a hold on Reuven's assets, and therefore they're similar to Yorshim, who have a definite hold. And therefore, Beis Shammai's opinion is Yachloiku. And as the Rishonim explain, the opinion of Beis Shammai in our Mishnah is not based on Sumchus's opinion that we've learned many times, the Mamar Amut B'Sofik Cholkim. That's not this case. Rather, Beis Shammai is of the opinion they both have equal claims, and therefore Yachloiku. The Rambam, interestingly, says that the case that our mission discusses could be another situation. We could have a situation, says the Rambam, where a father died in one country, the son died in another country, and we don't know who died first, and the exact same halacha will it will be the same halacha. In fact, what is the chiddush of the Rambam? The chiddush of the Rambam is that even though normally fathers die before sons, we both know they died around the same time, it's the same issue. It's interesting to note that the Chassam Sofer asks, why does the Mishnah, in fact, not mention that case, which, as we just explained, represents a chiddush? Answers the Chassam Sofer, because our Mishnah wanted to teach us what Beis Hillel taught us just now at the end of the Mishnah, that the Yorshim of a person are considered the Muchzokim. They're considered as if they already have ownership on these assets. And that's why, according to the opinion of Beis Hillel, they prevail. And that's why the Mishnah chose to speak about this case. Furthermore, asked the Chassam Sofer, why does the Mishnah have to teach us both the case, Nofel Abayis Olov Val Oviv, Nofel Abayis Olov Al Marishov? Says the Chassam Sofer, because each one of these cases represents a chiddush. The case of Nofel Abayis Olov Al Oviv, so the case we keep on referring to, Yaakov, Reuven, and Reuven's son, is to teach us that we don't look at the situation where if Reuven died before Yaakov, and therefore his sons Yarshin from their grandfather Yaakov, as if the Yerusha went from Yaakov to Reuven to them. For if that would be the way Yerusha worked, then it wouldn't make a difference if Reuven died before Yaakov or after Yaakov. The money came into Reuven's estate. Rather, if Reuven died before Yaakov, the Mishnah teaches us that the Yerusha goes directly from Yaakov to his grandchildren, and Reuven is not involved. Why does the Mishnah have to also teach us the halacha of Olov Val Merishav? Because we would think, as Beis Hillel just said, that Nechasim Bechaskasim, that's considered as if the Yarshim already have ownership of these assets. So we would assume that when does Beis Hillel say that the Yarshim already have ownership of these assets? Assets that they Yarshim from the grandfather, which are assets that will eventually be theirs no matter what. It's only a question if their father will get it first and then it'll come to them, or it'll go first, or it'll go directly to them. But when it's a situation of Marishov, who are individuals that they're not closely related to, so there we would think that since he's not closely related to them, that shouldn't be considered certainly not as close as a grandfather. That's as if Nechasim Becheskasam, teaches us Beis Hillel that even there it's considered Nechasim Becheskasam. Tanan Hasam, we learned in the Mishnah, Hamavas Kaver Bishtar, if I borrow money and it's a Melvak Suva Bishtar, if when the person who I owe money, if the Malva comes to collect his obligation, I don't have any assets, so the halacha is that any assets that I had at the moment that the loan was made become obligated to this loan, and therefore if I don't have any assets available, my Malva could go collect from those Nechasim Mishubadim. However, if the Malva was only Adayedim, if the loan was only witnessed by witnesses, but it wasn't committed to writing, the halacha is it could only be Goyim Nechasim Necharim. And the explanation, as we've learned many times, is as follows. A Milvak Suv Bishtar is well known. So if I borrowed money from somebody, Bishtar, people are aware that I owe this person money. And therefore, if somebody goes and buys property from me afterwards, he took a risk, knowing that if I won't have the ability to pay up my debt, they will go after the properties he bought for me. Whereas, a milva that's not committed to writing is not that well known, and therefore people who bought from me properties weren't aware of this mortgage that exists, and therefore they will not be held responsible. But now ask the Gemara, Boishmu the Ikni, can't someone put into his shtar that not only the assets that he currently owns, the properties that he currently owns, should be mortgaged to the loan, but even properties that he will buy should be mortgaged? For Connor, and he indeed buys more property, and if he wrote these words, do they become mortgaged to the loan or not? Mahu, says the Gemara. I'll leave it, Rav Meir, Dama Adam Machnadav Shlabalaylam. If we follow the opinion of Rav Meir that says Adam Machnadav Shlabalaylam, certainly loy the Bailoch the Vadi Kara. Because Rav Meir is the opinion that you could be Machnadav even something that doesn't currently exist. Al Kiti Bailoch, I'll leave it, Rabbanan. The question is according to Rabbanan, Dharma ein Adam Mak the Dovish Lebel Oilam. What will be the halacha if somebody wrote the word ikni into his obligation? And the Taisus asks, and really the question of Taisus is a twofold question. One question, Taisus says, where does Rameyus say, Adam Mak the Dovish Lebel Oilam? A case of Dekala Peroisov, where I sell the fruit of a tree, but I already have the tree, I already own the tree. But what does that have to do with a situation where I don't own this land? How could one obligate himself on a property that he doesn't own yet? And furthermore, the other side of this question is, what does the have mean according to Rabbanan? If the Rabbanan clearly hold that ain't other magna, dovish lo b'loilam, so how could I obligate myself to something that I don't currently own? So Rishayim give a number of terutzim. One terutz is, this property does exist in the world. I may not yet own it, but it certainly exists. And therefore it's considered Dovish Balaylam. Another terutz that the Rishonim suggest is because we have a concept that we learned many times in Shas, Shloitinol Delas Bifnei Lovin. Chazal were anxious that people should lend and borrow money. And if this is a way that we could get people to lend and borrow money by adding into it this obligation. Another pshat is that the Taisus works with, as the Achroidim try to explain what Taisus says, a kinyan is much more difficult to accomplish than a shibud. And therefore, even though a kinyan, you have to have something really tangible, a shibud is easier to effect, and even if the item isn't actually tangible in here, everybody will agree kibichal. Others explain what Taisus say. The Rajba seems to say this pshat very beautifully. They say as follows. What does a shibud mean? A shibud is not really on a piece of property. A shibud is on a person. I, if I borrow money, have an obligation to pay back. Just you can't pay back yourself. You have to pay back assets. Therefore, since I'm here, and I'm the one that's taking on this obligation, we don't have a concern of Dovish Labalaylam. I'm Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef wants to prove, answer this question from a Mishnah in Masechet Ksubos, Tashma. The Mishnah there discusses a situation where I owe somebody money. And then afterwards I bought property from that person. And that is a dispute, did I or did I not pay off my loan? I say, the fact that you sold me property is clearly indication that I paid off my obligation to you. Otherwise you would never send me property if I still owe you money. That's Admon's opinion. The Chachamim's opinion is different. The Chachamim say that a person that, and the Gemara is going to quote the opinion of the Chachamim, will sometimes sell me property in order that he should have from where to collect his loan. And as the Gemara Masechet Ksubos explains, that if the minig is that first the money is paid and afterwards the shtar is written, so there everybody will agree that the fact that you sold me property is clearly an indication that I paid off the loan. Because if I didn't pay off the loan, why did you agree to write a shtar that you sold me the property after I gave you the money? You should have said, first pay off the loan, and then I'll write the shtar. Here, the machlokes, says the Gemara Masechet Ksubos, is in a situation where the minig is to write the shtar first. So the Chum, as we're going to learn, say that you didn't write the shtar, because otherwise I would never agree to get into this deal. Admon says, and you only sold it to me in order to have from where to collect your obligation, my debt to you. Admon, however, says that true, you had to write the shtar. But what you should have done is, you should have gone to two Edom, and be Meismedah, notify them that the only reason you're entering this transaction is to have from where to collect the money I owe you. And the fact that you didn't do so is clearly an indication that I paid off the loan. And it says, Amr Rabbi Yosef, Toshma, Vacham Omer, Zaya B'keach, the one that sold me the property actually did a very smart thing. Shemachla Sakarka, you sold me property, Neshiyachla Mashkinolov, so from where you could collect my debt to you. So we see This property, clearly, I didn't have when I borrowed money from you. I only bought this property from you much later. Yet, the Gemara is saying, you could collect my debt to you from this property. Amalei Rava, says Rava, that isn't what we're discussing. Minei Kamar, properties that the loiva actually owns. Minei Mefil Maglima Vakasvei, anything that I have in my possession, certainly I have to use to pay off my debt. Even my coat. Although the Gemara says, when it says the coat, it only means that if I have another garment, or according to some Tanom, that I have an expensive garment that could be sold and I could buy a cheaper one. Kikam Abayla, the question that we're discussing is the Ikni Karnava Marcher, the Ikni Karnava Harch. I bought property after I borrowed money from you, and then I sold that property, or before you come to collect your debt. Can I obligate myself that those properties are mortgaged? Can I obligate myself that those properties are mortgaged to the debt? Interesting to note, the Sois points out that the halacha is that, let's say a child, his father did not do a pinyan aben on his behalf, then he has to make himself his own pinyan aben. And the halacha, says the Tzois, quoting the Gemara Masechet Bechorot, is that any property that was bought after, that the child acquired after he was born, becomes obligated to that loan. The question is, why isn't it the Ikni? Why should not that be in the category of Ikni? Explains the Tzois, when it comes to the Chiv opinion of Ben, there's a new Chiv every moment. It's not that there's a chiv that came at the moment of when the child became 30 days old. Rather, every moment there's a new chiv, and therefore every property there's a new obligation. So we still have our question. And the Gemara attempts to bring a raya, and that's how the sugya comes here from our Mishnah. Amrav Kona. Toshma. Nof al bayis alov al oviv, alov al merishav. Voice lo ksubis ishu bal chayv. And this person was owed money. Yorshe av oimrim. Haben meis rishin, v'akach meis av. The father's Yarshim say, the first the son died, and then the father, and therefore Ruvain, our example in the Mishnah, never had any assets to pay off his debt with. Or Balei Chayv Amrim, Chav meis rishin, first the father died, and then the son, and therefore Ruvain had assets to pay off his obligation. Now makes the Gemara its point. V'isal kedatech, dikni kano mocher, dikni kano v'hoirish. Anything that you only get later, loy mishtabit, doesn't become obligated to debt. Nay, even as the Gemara, even in the situation, the av meis risha, where the father passed away, and then the son yarshined him, and then he died. But these are assets that the son did not have when he went into this loan. So these assets fall into the category of iknihu. And we're saying that assets that are in the category of ikni are not obligated to the loan. Amalei Rav Nachman, Zirin Chavin Tigmar, Zirin, our colleague, explained this. Mitzvah Yisrael Milfroy Chavavim. If Ruvain Yarshin these assets, then his sons have an obligation to use these assets to pay off their father's debt. Only if the father never Yarshin do they not have this obligation. And Mefarshim discussed this concept of the mitzvah for Yisraelim to pay off their father's debts. Some explain that it's because of Kibbutz Ava'im. Kibbutz Ava'im requires that the children pay off their parents' debts. Others explain that it's a din, that the Yerusha, that the money that falls into Yerusha, should be used to pay off debts. The Pashta Nafkamina would be, is this din only if children are the Yarshim, or even if somebody's Yarshim and not his children? However, the halacha is that under all circumstances, the money that is falls into Yerusha must be used to pay off debts. However, the Rishonim explain that the halacha is as follows. Certainly in a situation where money, where karka, where the Yarshim Yarshin karka, that karka has to be used to pay off the debts, and Bezdin can compel them to use that karka, to pay off the debts from that karka. On the other hand, in a situation where someone died penniless, his Yarshim cannot be compelled to use their money to pay off that person's debt. Machloikas Rishonim, if he left metaltalin, cash, metaltalin, can Bezna compel them to use that cash from metaltalin to pay off the father's debt? Rabbi Kivega asks a question. If we're going to say that this halacha is based on the halacha of Kibur Ave'im, the halacha Kibur Ave'im teaches us that one has to be Mechaber Ave'im, but the halacha is one has to only use his father's money to do Kibur Ave'im. First, a person doesn't have to use his own money to do the mitzvah Kibur Ave'im. And therefore asks Rabbi Kivega, in our case, the moment the father dies, the Yorshi become the owners of this money. That's what Hilchos Yerusha teaches us. So if it's their money, why could they be compelled to use their money to fulfill the mitzvah of Kibur Ave'im? So he answers two terutz. One terutz, he says, is yes, when is there a halacha that I don't have to use my money to fulfill the mitzvah Kibur Ave'im? That's in a situation where I'm doing something on behalf of my father. But here I'm using my father's money to pay off his debts. That's not called my money, that's called his money. Another teretz, Rikivega says, is that this is part of what we learned earlier, that Chazal instituted Kadesh Loi Tinal Delos Bifnei Lavan. There's a very interesting shaila that was posed to Vosden, the Shaila of Tshuva Shevet Alevi. Such a circumstance. A father wrote checks to tzedakah, and then he passed away. That a rule, apparently, is that as soon as someone dies, the bank do not cash or honor any checks that he wrote, even if they're dated before the date of his death. What would be the din as far as the Yorshim having to replace those checks that the father wrote? So Ravosna Paskins as follows. The checks that were dated prior to their father's death, even though, as we just said, the banks will not honor, they have the obligation to write checks from their father's estate to stock up to replace those checks. However, let's say the father wrote post-dated checks to stock up, and then he died before those dates came due. So it's no more than a neder, than a pledge that the father accepted upon himself. It's not considered a choiv, an obligation that the father accepted upon himself. It's only considered a neder, a pledge that the father accepted upon himself. And the Yorshim are not obligated to fulfill the din that we're learning in our Gemara Mitzvah, the Froya, choiv as aviyem, doesn't apply to pledges and only applies to real obligations. Maskula, Ravashi, ask Ravashi, Milvapeh, our case that we're discussing, the credit where they're demanding that they pay off the debt is no more than a milvah peh, because even if there's a milvah shtar, still the milvah shtar wasn't to them. V'rav Shmuel Amar Tavayo milvah peh, if it's only in the category of a milvah peh, the loch is en goy v'loy min ha'yosh v'loy min ha'kuchas. So why are we saying that they're obligated? Ella, how must we explain our Mishnah that the Yorshim have to pay the debts with the assets that the father got, even though those assets weren't by the father clearly when he took on this loan? Our Mishnah clearly follows the opinion of Ramehi, Dama Adamak the Dovish Lebelayim. Says the Gemara, again trying to answer this question, what is the halacha by the Ikni? Arav Yachad Benor B'Koyd Mishmeid Ravina. Toshma. Shtari Chayv HaMukdamim Psulim. If somebody writes a shtar with an earlier date, that means if I borrowed money on Rosh Chodesh Nissan, and a shtar was written that the loan took place on Rosh Chodesh Adar, Psulim. Mechlokes Rishonim, to what degree are they possible? Some Rishonim say that they're possible, that they're not considered like a milvah b'shtar, but certainly they're considered like a milvah peh with Edom. Tosfos seems to quote a Ri that says that they very weak, that this is considered a very weak obligation. Hamucharim. Hamucharim means that the loan took place on Rosh Chodesh Nissan, but the shtar is only dated Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. And the Rashbam explained there are two ways that this could happen. Either that the money was actually loaned on Rosh Chodesh Nissan, but it wasn't committed to a shtar till Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, or when the loan was done, made in Rosh Chodesh Nissan, they immediately wrote only that the obligation, that the debt that should be shtar should only be written from Rosh Chodesh Tishrei afterwards. Aksher. Says the Gemara, Visakatatach, if we're going to say, Dikni Kano Machar, Dikni Kano Vaharish, assets that are bought after the loan is undertaken, Loim Mishtabit, cannot become obligated to the loan, because they're a Dovash Loi B'L'Oilam. So now we have a question, asked the Gemara. Mechar Namai Ksherim. Why is a Shtam Ucher Kasher? A Shtam Ucher should not be Kasher. Diknihu. These assets, let's think it through. I borrowed money on Rosh Chodesh Nissan. The document only says Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. And I bought assets in Tammuz. So if the debt, if what is bought afterwards is not subject to the lien, somebody who sees the shtar will say that anything that I owned and Rosh Chodesh Tishrei is obligated to the loan. But the loan didn't take place in Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. The loan took place in Rosh Chodesh Nissan. And those assets that I bought in Tammuz are not assets that should be obligated to this loan. The fact that shtar mechar makshir is clearly an indication that even assets that I bought later can be obligated. Again, says the Gemara, this is not a raya, because we could say that Mishnah follows the opinion of Mani. It follows the opinion of Rameya. The Rameya clearly holds that a person could make a kinyan on Davish Lobel Olam. The nice Chassidus Shavart on this Gemara from Rav Herschel Rimanover, he explains like this: Shtari Chayiv represent the Averis, those are the Chayivis that we do. Shtari Chayiv Hamugdomim, if somebody does tshuva, we're only regretting Hamugdomim, the Shtari Chayiv, the Averis that he previously did, Psulim, that isn't the right type of tshuva a person has to do. What type of tshuva must a person do? Shtari chayv hamucharim. He has to do tshuva. Then not only does he regret on the averis that he did previously, but a mucharim, he also speaks about the future and he accepts upon himself in the future to do better. So Gemara, again, is trying to answer Shmuel's question, what is the halacha regarding the ikni? Ara mishash mishmei derava. Toshma. L'shvach kakos keitzad. What is the din if somebody bought a property that was mortgaged and he made the property better? And again, as the Rishonim point out, it's not referring to a situation where the property became better by itself. Rather, I, the purchaser of this property, invested into it to make it better. Which means as follows. Hareisha makasad l'chaveri. I owe somebody money and I sold property to an individual, and invested money into making the property more valuable. And now, somebody comes and the person I owed money to comes and takes the property away from him. And now he comes back to me. When he comes back to collect from me, Goiva's a keren, he could collect the money that was taken from him, the keren, Munachosim Shabadim, from any properties. That means if I had properties that I had sold after I sold the property to him, so he has lien on those properties, and therefore he can collect the amount of the debt, the amount of what he paid from those mechushabadim. But the amount that he put in to making the property better, he could only collect properties that I have, not properties that I sold. Ask Tosfos, if I have nechosim v'necharim that he could collect the shvach from, so why is my balchayv going to him? My balchayv should be coming to me. So the simple teretz is that it's referring to a situation that are paitiki, that the property that I sold first was pledged to be the property from which this loan would be satisfied, and therefore he has a right to go after that. Another teretz is that I only got this property afterwards, and therefore, that's when he could collect Mnei Chayim, where my Balchayv came he couldn't take it. Now the question that the Rishonim also ask is, why could the Baal Chayiv, that the Baal Chayiv has a right to take the property? It's very understandable. The property is mortgaged to him. But why does he have a right to take the Shvach? There was no mortgage on the Shvach. So the Rishonim, Tosfos, and the way the Mefarshim explain Tosfos's answer to this question is that it's referring to a situation when I obligate a piece of property, when I mortgage a piece of property, it's understood that the piece of property is going to be obligated to this debt in any status that it is. And if it got better, that's part of my mortgage obligation. Now makes the Gemara's point. V'isakadatach. Ask the Gemara. Dikne koine moicha. Dikne koine faharish lo mishtabid. That a person can't accept upon himself a further obligation on something that isn't there. B'chayv v'may goy v'shivcha. Why could he take the shvach? And says the Gemara, Hamani, again, this Mishnah follows their opinion, and even though the Shvach wasn't there, he can collect from it. And as I just explained, that is included in the obligation that when I mortgage the piece of property, that as the property gets better, that property is all mortgaged to this obligation. So we still don't have an answer to our question, what is the halacha regarding the ikni? It's interesting to point out that the Rishonim make the following observation. We know that there's a concept of a chrayis tos sofer, that even if the mortgage obligation is not written into the shtar, there is such an obligation automatically. So they make the following observation, because as our Gemara is going to now say, im tim tzloima, dikni kono mocher, dikni kind of a Irish, if we're going to follow the opinion that one cannot assume upon himself such an obligation, it's obvious that it's not mishtabit. However, if we're going to follow the opinion that one can accept upon himself the obligation of the ikni, and as I was about to say, which means as follows, in the case where I left out the achrayis, the Rishonim say it could be I also omitted the ikni, even though it should automatically belong there. However, the Rishonim do point out that if the shtar does have the achrayis clause in it, but the ikni clause is missing, we can't say that it was just a mistake. And there we say that there is no ikni clause. So our Gemara is referring, the our Gemara which now says the ikni does work, is either referring to a situation where he specifically wrote in the ikni, or in a situation where both the achrayis was left out and the ikni is left out, and there we assume that they both belong there. What would be the halacha in the following situation? Love of a chazakainam. I borrowed money, I had the ikni clause in the shtar, and then I borrowed money a second time. Mahu. Do we say that the and then afterwards I buy assets. Who will those assets be mortgaged to? L'kama mishtabit. We could seriously argue that it should go to the first individual, because his debt is first, which normally he goes first. Or l'bas mishtabit, or does it go to the second one? Because as the Rashbam explains, what happens here is, by saying the ikni the second time, I'm cancelling the first ikni and making the second ikni the powerful one. Amar of Nachman. We had this question, and the answer from Eretz Yisrael came, Rishin Kana. That since the first one has the first mortgage, he has the first mortgage regarding Ikni too. Rav Huna Amar, Yachloiku. It should be divided. Yachloiku here doesn't mean that it should be just divided 50-50. As Rishonim point out, Yachloiku should be divided, the assets that were bought after these loans took place should be divided proportionally to the size of the loan. Amar Ravina, Madura Kamed Ravashi, as the Rashbam explains, Ravashi spent a lot of time learning, But the months of Nisan and Tishrei, he spent reviewing Shas. And it took him, he did this for 60 years. First 30 years, he reviewed Shas, and then again, he did it for another 30 years. The first 30 years are called the Madur Kama Ravashi. The second 30 years are called the Madur Basra. Ravina, Amar Ravina, Madur Kama Ravashi, Ravashi's first cycle, he said Rishin Kana, the first mortgage goes first. Madur Basra Travashi, in the second cycle, he said, Yachloiku, Tachlocha is Yachloiku. Meisvei asked the Gemara, Lefrach, Kakoros, Ketzad, we just learned the Brisa. Harei Shemacha Sodal Chaveroi. If I sold a piece of property to somebody else, Vishbicha, and he made it better, or Ba Balchoiv Atarfa, and now the Balchoiv, my Balchoiv, who has a mortgage on this property, takes it away, and now this person comes back to me, because the property was taken from him. The halacha is shugayva when he comes to collect back what he is owed. Gayva is a kamin nechasim shabadim. If I sold properties after I sold him this property, he could go after those properties for the keren, for the principal. Vesa shevach nechasim nechayim. The shvach that he put in that was taken from him, he could only take from my bichnei chayim. Vim isa. Ask the Gemara if what we just learned is correct. Hani shvach mi boilei. He should only have to lose part of the investment, because here the both of them, the creditor and the buyer, have a lien on these improvements. So why is the Mishnah saying that the Baal Choyv could take the whole shvach? Shouldn't we say that this is a situation where we have two creditors? Because they both have a claim to me on the property that's being taken. That the Gemara just said that when two people have a claim, the halacha is yachloiku. And says Gemara, my govern nami k'tani. Indeed, when it says that he takes a shear, he doesn't take, he has to give up the shvach. It doesn't mean he takes the entire shvach. Chatzi shvach. He only takes chatzi shvach because the other shvach, the person who's holding the field, has a claim to also.